He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday. It is the Thursday, March 12th, Straits of Hormuz edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. And with a couple of attacks there in the Straits of Hormuz, that's the hot spot in the world right now. We've got a bit of a down day in the markets, and we have oil rising once again up into the $94 range. And as a result, the Dow is down 511 points right now. That works out to just over 1%. The Dow is at 46,905. We have the NASDAQ down 277 right now, 1.2. Weakness in the chips, weakness in AI. The S&P is down 64 points to 6,711. The Russell 2000 down 1.5%. And meanwhile, seeing a big spike in interest rates again, 4.24% is where we are on the 10-year right now, once again, seeing some elevated numbers there. Crude oil is up 8.7% to 94.82. Gold is down 0.5%, and Bitcoin is down 189 to 70,219. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only money management firm. And we had a decent day in the markets yesterday, although it kind of sold off. We were up, and then we sold off a bit going into the close. And we had oil prices coming down. But since we last talked yesterday, there were two attacks in the Straits of Hormuz. They got to get that under control, Barry. That seems to be the choke point right now.
Yeah, and in everything, oil is the one that, you know, obviously the commodity that everyone's talking about. But I was reading, saw some info on, you know, urea and you know, fertilizer.
Yeah,
it's planting season. So then you end up, you know, it all just domino effects across
you'll
the globe.
You'll be paying
really more
for cucumbers and string beans here before long, right, because nitrogen and potash and things like that go into growing our crops, that's being impacted right now by the Straits of Hormuz. That's why it's all interlinked, and that's why, you know, our show, really, politics, world events, you know, global markets all come together in our 50-minute show every day. We call it Best Stocks Now, but obviously it covers a lot more territory than that because it all feeds in
to the weighing machine,
to
right?
the market, and it feeds into your grocery bag at Walmart.
Yeah, right.
It feeds into your gas tank at Costco. I mean, across the board, in one way or another, all of these things are affecting your life in one way or another, even, you know, your retirement plans someday. So we had a decent day yesterday. We had a good CPI report. That was good news. It came in at 2.4. We saw a big surge in Oracle yesterday. Not a stock that I'm enamored with at the current time. A little bit behind the times. You know, it was a great stock at one time, but companies have life cycles, and you want to own them when they're flourishing and not struggling. Tanker attacks in the Persian Gulf. Crude oil rose to the highs of the day on Wednesday, and of course they're going up again today, following reports that a fire broke out on an oil tanker in the Persian Gulf near Basra in Iraq's territorial waters. Hey, they're venturing out into other waters now that don't belong to them after an apparent attack, while a second tanker anchored off the coast of Kuwait suffered an explosion. At least three cargo ships were hit earlier near the Strait of Hormuz, bringing the number of vessels struck in the region since the Iran conflict began to at least 14. 14 vessels have been hit. And that's why it's hard to get insurance on a vessel right now from Lloyd's of London going through the Straits of Hormuz. And I got to believe they're going to amp up the pressure big time in knocking out the source of these attacks on these ships going through there.
Yeah, and the problem is there, you know, some of these ships is not they were already trapped in port. It wasn't like they, strolled up and, oh, here we are. It was, they're stuck. Some of these are stuck in port and are getting hit, but they can't really leave, and they're getting hit while they're while they're sitting there.
So. Yeah, exactly. And there were several releases of the strategic oil reserves from other countries outside of the U.S.
all over the globe. I mean, Asia particularly.
Yep, and the U.S., the Trump administration, plans to release 172 million barrels from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve as part of a coordinated global effort to curb rising crude and fuel prices. It's been less than two weeks after the start of the Iran-Iran war. Energy Secretary Chris Wright announced Wednesday evening that the release will take roughly 120 days to deliver oil from the Energy Department's emergency reserve. So it at least puts downward pressure. It puts oil supply on the increase, and it puts downward pressure on oil prices. But then you have these events like explosions occurring on tankers, and that kind of offsets
each other. Yeah, and the tricky thing is obviously those 120 days from now. So when we talk about spot price or what the price of oil is, that's the most current contract that's going to be coming due fairly soon. And the interesting thing is you're starting to see these December contracts start to rise and get and push closer and closer to what the current spot price is, which folks who are hedging fuel costs 8 months from now, right? That they're hedging those costs right now at a higher price. And so what you're doing with these, announcing these different releases is you're really trying to, pull down those future prices, right? Hedging prices, you don't have as much control over the current spot price, especially if it takes 120 days to get the stuff out there, right? So.
And the guy who's celebrating all of this is Putin in Russia. Yeah. Where 80% of their economy is dependent upon oil prices. So it's in his best interest to, help Iran block those Straits of Hormuz. I don't know that he's doing that, but he certainly has a motivation to do it and to keep those closed and keep oil prices high. 7.5% of the worldwide supply goes through the Straits of Hormuz. The Iran war causes the biggest disruption ever in the oil markets. That's what the IEA says. I think that's a little bit overstated myself. They're saying that the war in the Middle East is creating the largest supply disruption in the history of the global oil markets. Tanker traffic through the strait, which carried about 20 million barrels per day of crude and refined products last year, has fallen more than 90%. So, you're down to just 2 million barrels a day going through there. And the IEA reportedly said the conflict could cut global oil supply by around 8 million barrels per day this month. And they say that's the largest. Of course, we're using a lot more oil today than we were 50 years ago, calling it the largest disruption that the oil markets have ever faced. And of course, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. Now, Brent crude, which is out of London, it climbed above $100 a barrel on Thursday.
And there usually should be about a $5 difference between the two. And I think we talked earlier this week where they were basically WTI, you know, Texas crude and Brent were the same price. Now that's kind of gotten back to normal where you can kind of look at it and there's, you know, that $5 difference between both. But yeah, the Europeans are in a much worse situation when it comes to energy, LNG, oil than, you know, certainly we are.
Yes.
We are the biggest oil producer in the world. People forget that.
Yep. And I see Goldman Sachs is hiking their oil outlook. Brent crude surges past $100 on Thursday as escalating hostilities in the Persian Gulf, including fresh attacks on commercial tankers. Goldman Sachs, meanwhile, has raised its Brent WTI crude oil price forecast for the fourth quarter 2026 to $67 to $71 a barrel. So they see it pretty much as a temporary thing up this level, but 67 to 71 is quite elevated. We were below 50 there for a while. All right, when we come back, there's a lot of other areas. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, Mosaic and CF Industries ranked as two of the top three gainers on the S&P 500 on Wednesday, up 10% and 9% respectively. And I see they're breaking out again today to the upside. That's MOS and CF as the Middle East war continues to disrupt fertilizer shipments through the Strait of Hormuz. Nutrien is the third one, NTR, and I'm looking at all three of those stocks today. They're all breaking out to the upside. You know, whether or not they're a good investment at this point in time, that's questionable.
Similar to the Russian invasion. I mean, remember when we used to joke around and I became a fertilizer analyst?
That's right.
I mean, that was, you know, it's interesting when I was looking at that, you know, it's almost like, you know, we're sitting here a handful of years later with the Russian-Ukraine conflict. But, you know, if it's certainly if it's something that prolongs, I mean, those are kind of that similar game plan. At one point, there was only a few things that worked when you look back at that period. I think it was just really, you know, commodity-based businesses and everything else was kind of, just basically flat or down during that period.
Well, but this is the time of year, about every April, I get two big giant bags of turf from Scott. Scott's a turf builder. That also kills all of the southern weeds that we have down here. I think last year I paid $76 per bag, and that kind of pretty much does my whole front yard and backyard. We'll see what they are this year. I'll price them today. But this is planting season, and more than a third of global fertilizer moves through that waterway. How important is that waterway? It just seemed clear to me that has to be one of the top priorities, if not the top priority, is to create a clear passage. You had the Houthi rebels; they were hitting a different area, but that's a critical part of the world shipping. Otherwise, you got to go clear down around the Horn of Africa, and that really adds a lot of cost to shipping. So, you know, but fertilizer, obviously, that affects feed for cattle and pigs and livestock and vegetables and fresh fruit.
Domino effect all the way through the whole system. I mean, even diesel, right? I mean, diesel fuel in terms of everything being, you know, farm to table, everything, you know, being trucked, you know, so much things being trucked here in the U.S. particularly. So all of those, the longer it you know goes on, the longer that strait stays blocked. It's no different than in COVID when you had, or remember when we had the, I think we talked about, was the Suez Canal was blocked. Remember you had that ship that was stuck the one, you know, for a little while over
yeah,
there?
Yeah, blocking the strait there.
Yeah, the so it's... It's and you as you mentioned, I think it's about 10 million barrels of oil, if not more, that kind of go through that area. So if you think of the math, what we IEA said they're going to release, you know, call it 400 million barrels of oil. It's essentially 40 days.
So. Yeah, 40 days and 40 nights. They wandered yeah, in the wilderness.
Funny how that works. Funny how it works out like that.
Yeah, it's a big number in the Bible for some yeah, reason. 40. My big arch might be $12.16 by this Saturday. I paid $11.16 the initial run. I don't know that I'd be running back to buy another one real anytime soon. But, you know, it's going to affect the price of a big arch hamburger. Then people are going to demand that the Strait of Hormuz gets cleared. Now, there are five different stories coming in today on private credit.
Oh yeah, it's a
they're
lucky. Private credit's lucky that you know that this this Strait of Hormuz is blocked because
yes.
it would be on the front page for sure.
This was another horrible idea by Wall Street to earn fees, to earn commissions, to create a product for RIAs like me or broker-dealers or brokers to sell. And it was obvious that it's a worse idea than the mortgage, packaging the mortgage loans back in 08 and 09. We're
like
going to find out.
At least you had a home back then, right?
Yes. We're going to find out if it's going to have the same magnitude as the 08-09 crisis, which took the S&P 500 down 53%. Is the private credit party over amid surging redemptions? Well, that's in today's it's in today's Seeking Alpha. Are there cockroaches still crawling around? At 100%. Private credit fears are on the rise again as major funds reveal redemption pressures and banks move to cut their risk tied to the sector. I'm telling you, the little guy is going to be left holding the bag. It's also creating a big dilemma for the industry. I got to break out that T-shirt, BWRA. Bill was right again.
Somebody brought that one to you, didn't they?
No, I had a guy that worked for me that had a bunch of them printed up because he noticed that Bill has a propensity to be right a lot. My mother used to say the same thing. Never argue with Bill, she would say. Whose loan holdings and values are quite opaque and cannot offer immediate liquidity? I've noticed that a lot of these large private equity firms that are publicly traded are selling off non-related assets, and I think it's to raise cash. They're not saying that, but all of a sudden they're selling off like an asset that's AI-related or energy-related. It's to raise cash to pay off these redemption requests. This is getting very, very bad. The modern private credit industry opened for business after the global financial crisis as all types of caps and limits were slapped on banks. Private credit firms emerged. So you know what? I mean, you close one door and another door opened as banks, you know, had to have stricter limits. It seems to me like they're asleep at the wheel, allowing these private credit firms to pick up the slack and do some of this high-risk lending. And companies like Blackstone, Apollo, Carlyle Group, they're all under heavy pressure. Red flags first appeared in the fall after auto parts maker First Brands.
That's who it was. I was trying to think of that one last week.
And subprime auto lender Tricolor Holdings went bankrupt. things escalated last month as redemption requests spiraled at direct lender Blue Owl, while BlackRock, I saw an interview with the CEO of BlackRock last night on the news, later curbed withdrawals from one of its largest private credit funds. Now, J.P. Morgan is marking down loan portfolios of private credit groups. So, wait, when we come back, four more stories on this private credit mess. And we do have an inverse ETF against the financials right now. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. And as this private credit unwinds, there's four ways to, play it if you have the stomach for it. Number one, ProShares short high yield. That thing's breaking out today. All right. So that is an inverse ETF. One-to-one against the liquid high-yield index or the junk bond index, okay? So you're taking an inverse position on the junk bond index. So it's gone from 1518 to 1552. It's up about 3 or 4%. It has a pretty solid chart right now. But better yet, you have SEF, which is short the financials. That is up 16%. Since the beginning of the year, SEF is one time short the financials. And look, you look back at 08 and 09, just think how these inverse financials did. That was the eye of the hurricane. And I remember that the double short the financials, SKF, it was up like 300 or 400% that year. And that would be another one. SKF is two times inverse, the daily performance of the S&P Financial Select Sector. It's breaking out today. It's breaking through resistance. If you've been to one of my workshops or if you've received my newsletter, you've seen that simple way to look at charts. They're either in a sideways number one pattern. They're in a number two pattern, which is up. They're in a number three pattern, which means they've been going up and now they're leveling off. Or they're in a number four down pattern, just like an aircraft taking off on the runway, getting altitude, going into a number two, leveling off at 30,000 feet, and then coming in for a landing in a number four down pattern. And I've always said that ideally, the best place to buy a stock is as it emerges out of a number one sideways pattern and breaks out
to the upside
through what we call resistance, a ceiling. It's an imaginary ceiling, but every time the stock or ETF hits that, it backs off. Well, when it finally breaks out, which SKF did about 5 days ago, now you don't have any overhead resistance. You don't have anybody that owns this thing at a higher price who's dying to get out. Everybody is pretty much a fresh owner of it, and they've got profits, and it continues to rise. And then, of course, there's a three times financial, and it's breaking out too. It is up 55% since the beginning of the year. 55% FAZ. FAZ, F-A-Z, is a direction product. That's another family of ETFs, and it is juiced, I want to say, three times. And it's up 4.1% today and hitting a new 52-week high. So I think it's going to continue to get worse. I don't think they're going to be able to turn this battleship called private credit, which what there's a couple trillion dollars in it, and it's starting to really, you know, the tip of the iceberg we saw about a month ago, although we've seen it underneath the surface coming for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, and then J.P. Morgan, I mean, one of their particular products that they have, they've limited the amount of redemptions to 5%. And so, you know, so in terms of, you know, getting your money out, right, even if let's say the price of the underlying stays the same, right, it's still going to take you, I mean, the illiquidity portion, is you know, just tough to deal with. You might get your money, even if you get your money back, it's going to be over a long period of time, and you could have used that capital for something else more productive.
It's very similar to the non-traded REIT situation, which we inherited a lot of non-traded REITs over the past several years. And it's true. They don't trade. You're stuck in them, and you really have no idea what the valuation is. You know, it's really what they tell you.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem right now. Blue Owl, who I can't tell you how many articles I saw, buy this 10% yield all day long. How can you pass it up? It's at 10.1 right now, the dividend yield. As it goes down, the yield goes up. But as it goes down, the value of your portfolio goes down, of your holding. Blue Owl's private credit valuations are being questioned now by a lot of money managers. They're supposed to be marking that stuff down, and that was the same pattern that the non-traded REITs followed. They weren't marking them down, and so they were saying, well, it's not correlated to the market. See, the market went down, and your REIT stayed the same. That was in the early innings of the whole non-traded REIT business, which we another one that we avoided like the plague. And this is just as bad of idea, if not worse, than the non-traded REITs. And it's all done in the greed on the side of Wall Street, creating a product that they can sell to people, make a fee, brokers can make a commission, and they can lure people in by the you know, double-digit interest rate returns. I see why refi doing the same thing with heavy television coverage. And then at the very end of their commercial, they say, oh, and by the way, make sure you get a private placement memorandum and read it thoroughly before you invest. But anytime you see, we can't find a bond much over 5% right now. In fact, it's getting hard to find one over 5%. So you know that when they're offering 10 to 11% returns for investors, there's a big, major red flag that should go up, and yet a lot of people have been sucked into this. It just seems like, you know, it'll show up again. What will be the next thing? I mean, private equity will be that already is a big thing, but they'll dream up some other scheme. And now Morgan Stanley, here's your fourth story. Private credit limits redemptions amid growing credit market fears. Oh, more problems. And now these people are starting to be called on the carpet at CNBC, and this whole issue down underneath the surface is starting to be exposed, where we've been warning for well over a year about what we saw underneath the surface. And then the tentacles go far and wide. While Deutsche Bank does not have any direct credit risk, they have credit risk through interconnected portfolios and counterparties. Shares are down 4.3% today on Deutsche Bank as private credit and activities from non-bank financial institutions. It's a way to go around the tight regulations at the banks. They created an easier way because they're not regulated the same way that the banks are. They're getting They continue to face pressure from higher interest rates, refinancing risk, and subdued investor sentiment. That's another thing.
That's the old shadow banking system is what that
is.
Yes,
and you're losing the liquidity, okay? As new money comes in, this was what Bernie Madoff was running. As new money came into Madoff's fund, he had plenty of money sloshing around to continue to pay the interest payments, right? Now, as new money wanes, new money is not coming in, and the value of the portfolios go down, and all of a sudden you get redemption requests as people start to get scared of what's going on, now you have a perfect storm, and it's not good. Cliffwater Private Credit Fund gets redemption requests totaling 14%. Here's the fifth story today. And, you know, I got one as recently as 2 weeks ago from Carlyle Group saying, we're everything private. Private credit, private equity, we specialize in it.
I have noticed they have slowed down a time.
I haven't gotten one since
then. We used to just get pummeled.
Two a day.
Yeah, at least.
Right.
And then you would forward it to me, too.
So. There's a lot of firms out there that either created this private credit, a lot of firms that bought pools of this private credit. There's broker-dealers that sold this private credit. And then, of course, there's the individuals that are holding this private credit. So the tentacles far and wide, and it could be the unraveling of the 2008-2009 bull market. Began in 08 and 09. Look at the charts. This could be the unraveling. We'll just have to see. We'll be right back. Back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we just went through five stories on an area of the market that is extremely vulnerable. And I would just go back, you know, the bear market of 2000, which took the NASDAQ down 79%, finally ended in about 2003. And then we had a bull market until about 2007. It lasted about 4 years. Believe it or not, the value stocks were leading in that period of time. And then all of a sudden, stories like this began to emerge about the mortgage markets and the packaging of the subprime loans and the housing market. And all of a sudden, people not camping out anymore overnight to just get a home in a housing tract with no money down, and you know, all of that came to a crashing halt, and that brought down that bull market that lasted from 2003 to 2007. And then we had the great bear market of 08 and 09 called the financial crisis, and that brought down the S&P 53%. And then in 09, March of 09, I wrote a newsletter that said a new bull market is being born because I saw the earnings estimates starting to rise once again after they had been ratcheted down for a couple of years from 07 throughout to 07 and to 08. And that bull market is still intact today, 2009 to today. You take out the COVID year, just look at a chart of the S&P. Pull up a 15-year chart or 20-year chart of the S&P 500, and you will see that we've been in a cyclical or a structural bull market since 08, and since March of 09. And something will eventually bring it to a halt. And I'm not sure if this is it or not, but it's usually something that Wall Street dreams up. Or it's usually where there's a massive bubble, Barry. In 2000, it was the massive bubble in the dot-com stocks. It finally just crashed the market, crushed it. And in 08, 07, it was the massive bubble in the housing market.
Yeah, financial engineering, really, packaging, yes. You know, the packaging of those subprime,
which created
mortgages.
Demand. I mean, if you could go get a loan by just signing the papers, it created artificial demand for houses. Those houses weren't even being lived in. They were being bought. There was no equity. They would go up in value, and they would turn around and sell them because they had built a little bit of equity in the home. It was not sustainable is the problem. It was unsustainable. And it all came crashing down, and we've been going up ever since March of 09. The earnings have been going up except for the COVID year. And I've always said eventually something will start to cause the earnings to start being ratcheted downwards. And it will be another bubble, or it will be something that Wall Street dreams up. Like they did with the mortgages this time, and then they did it with the private, they did it with the non-traded REITs too, which created a bit of a nightmare in the real estate
certainly
sector.
Certainly the office REITs, and some of that still hasn't even played out since
no.
COVID.
But. And that would be the other area that's vulnerable, very vulnerable, are the office and commercial real estate REITs, real estate investment trusts, the whole REIT market really. Is vulnerable. But, you know, the earnings continue to go up for now. But just file that in the back of your drawer, in the back of your mind, that this is brewing, this private credit thing. I knew it was a big, big problem. I'm going to say maybe 6-9 months ago, I was listening to Bloomberg, and I heard the CEO of Franklin Templeton Mutual Funds.
Yes.
Just showing the virtues of private credit. Oh, this is the best thing. We're all in. I go, oh.
Which used to be a pretty conservative firm is over the long, long history.
They had a well-known fund, the Franklin Templeton Income Fund.
Yeah.
And I'd like to look at what the returns of that have been over the last 10 years, but it was their flagship fund. And when she said, we're all in on private credit, and I was getting 4 to 5 emails per day, let us help you with private credit, get your clients into private credit. And as companies interviewed me about buying my company, they all asked, what is your appetite for
private credit? Well,
what's the word I'm looking for? Alternative.
Yeah, alternative investments.
I said, I have no appetite. Goodbye. And they, of course, the feeling was mutual. They wanted nothing to. They wanted my radio, me to pitch my radio listeners their crap and put their crap into my people's portfolios. And I said, no thanks. And I turned down some very large offers of people that wanted to buy my firm, nationwide firms that you would recognize the names of, because I would not have anything to do whatsoever. And I'm talking a lot of firms.
Right. Yeah.
You know, close to 100, believe it or not. And they need those next
warm bodies, right?
All wanted to take over management of my clients and put my clients into their crap that they've come up with. And they earn a fee, blah, blah, blah. It's all, you know what? It's not a way to build a sustainable growth model for a business. It's a one-hit wonder. You get those fees, and then the people get mad, and you lose. It's just not a good thing, but they never learn. And there's some companies that are up to their eyeballs in this stuff. It's the tentacles and far and wide. Now, I'm just going to close with this. There's 4 good stories on one stock today. Palantir expands deal with GE Aerospace to use AI for military aircraft. Palantir and NVIDIA to provide sovereign AI operating system architecture. Centrus, which is a big uranium miner, and Palantir partner on U.S. uranium enrichment expansion. They eye $300 million in cost savings. Well, there were 3 big stories. 3 big stories on Palantir in different areas, defense, uranium enrichment, AI with NVIDIA and Palantir is on the good end, the sunny side of the street for now. Well, I hear the music. We're out of time. To get in touch with us, give us a call at 855-611-BEST. Set up an appointment with us. Get away from these greedy monsters on Wall Street. If you'd like to just sample the newsletter and the portfolios, the five products that we offer here at Gunderson Capital Management, go to GundersonCapital.com. GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.